This episode is brought to you in part by Thomas Nelson, publisher of But God Can, How to Stop Striving and Live Purposefully and Abundantly. Written and narrated by Becky Kaiser and is available everywhere audiobooks are sold.
Welcome to the Grace Enough podcast. I am your host, Amber Cullum. This week, I sit down with registered nurse, life coach, and author, Doreen Steenland. We discuss practical and simple techniques that help deactivate the brain, moving it from a place of stress or survival to peace, flourishing, and healthy connection to God and others. You can receive the first two chapters of Doreen's book, Transform Your Brain, One Thought at a Time, by visiting DoreenSteenland.com. If you're a fan of Grace Enough, please follow the show in your favorite listening app. That way, you'll never miss a new episode when they drop every Tuesday. I am grateful for your support and would love to hear any feedback you have regarding today's episode. Open Instagram or Facebook and send me a message at GraceEnoughPodcast_Amber. Good morning, Doreen, and welcome to the Grace Enough Podcast.
Oh, thank you. I am so excited to be here. Really great to be with you, Amber.
Yeah, it's going to be lovely to have a conversation that sometimes can get in the weeds when we're talking about God and brain and how all of our emotions work into that. But it is something that fascinates me. And I know it's something that fascinates you, right?
Oh, yeah. It is my passion. And that passion really stemmed from my own need.
I understand that. And I mean, we're going to get a little bit into your background as a medical professional. And my background is physical therapist, even though I'm not practicing now. And so I think there is this part of us that just kind of bubbles up when we start talking about the brain.
Yes.
or maybe there's not very many of us that are like, we don't know what in the heck you're talking about. But even my daughter, who particularly it just enjoys science more than my boys, like I can see her little wheels turning, you know, when you start talking about certain things. And so it's really cool.
It really is. Although I'm a little sciencey, I'm a little more right brain heavy.
I like
right brain dominant. So I really like to take neuroscience and make it simple. That is my goal, to take the principles that I've learned and really make them simple and digestible so everyone can benefit from them. That's
I love that. None of us want to sit. I remember being in neuroanatomy and neurophysiology and just being like, and plus when you're young and you're still trying to layer everything up in school and it's like, oh my gosh, what is happening right now? I can't do all this.
Yes, it's too much sometimes, right? Like all the neurochemicals and all of those things. And so in my opinion, we don't need to focus. We're not neuroscientists.
That's
so
right.
We don't need to have all of those details down. What we need to have is a basic understanding of how our brain and body work together to connect us to God, others, and ourselves.
Well, I'm looking forward to having that conversation. But as we dive in, I always ask my guests who are coming on for the first time to just hear a little bit of your story of how you came to know Christ. Share a little of that early faith journey with us.
That is a can of worms there. So I grew up in a blue-collar family, and my parents were kids raising kids. They were 19 when they had me. So a good day was really just getting food on the table and keeping the kids alive, you know, like that's how it was for us. Although my parents were amazing parents, they had limited skills.
Yep.
Right. They definitely did not have emotional intelligence. They definitely, emotions were almost taboo. They would get in the way. So being a highly emotional and sensitive kid, it was hard for me. So this is a large part of how I started my life. We weren't a church-going family. My dad was Roman Catholic. My mom was Lutheran. neither went to church, but they sent me with a dollar every Sunday with the neighbor to the Catholic church. And so I have memories as a young kid of taking that dollar and being super excited on Sundays to go to church. And there was something about the music and the connecting that really always just touched me deep in my soul. Mm-hmm. And this is all retrospective and looking back.
Right.
In the time, I would never have said that, right? But my journey through my life, being that emotional kid who wasn't able to share, who was in a house where sharing and emotions were basically shut down, I was sadly in situations where there was abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, verbal abuse, all kinds of things that shaped my life that happened. I lived a full lifetime before the age of 25. And I don't want to get into the details of all of that because that's not really our purpose here. The purpose is there was a lot of trauma that was unmanaged.
Yeah.
There was a lot of stuff that I never got help for. And there was a time where I left home when I was 18, got married. And I married the same kind of person that I was trying to escape.
I mean, but that says so much about our brains, doesn't it, Doreen?
Yes,
like
yes,
we do what we know.
Yes, yes. So that did not last long. There was physical abuse there. I left. And when I went to the Catholic Church for help at that time, they turned their back on me. And this is not about the Catholic Church. This was about a specific organization that I had gone to. So I don't want to, this is not a bashing session, but that was very impactful for me. And it made me feel really lost. And I started counseling. I started doing some healing with counselor. Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting because the counselor basically told me I had a broken picker.
A broken picker,
because I was picking all the wrong people to hang with, right? And so this counselor gave me advice that at the time I thought was crazy, but I see the wisdom in it now. He told me to try to choose the exact opposite of the kind of person I was attracted to. And I know that sounds crazy, but what this counselor knew is that these patterns that we keep going back to uh-huh. feel familiar for us, right? And so there was wisdom in that and there was discomfort. And so that's enter stage left. My current husband, who we've been together now 34 years, came into the stage and I did not know Christ at that time. Hmm. I was in my 20s. At 27, we were dialoguing about Christ. He had been saved at a Billy Graham crusade. The only thing I ever knew was the Catholic Church. So we had a lot of late night discussions about God and Jesus. And then, you know, he had just moved into the area. So we said, let's go church shopping. And so we were going every Sunday to different churches to experience different kinds of churches. And then one Sunday he got called into work as an emergency. And I went without him. I felt this tug to go to the church that we were supposed to go to. And that was my day of salvation.
Wow.
That day, the pastor gave an altar call. And I don't know, like, we don't really know what's happening when God moves in our heart.
Yep.
But something happened to me. And I went home. I was in tears. I was broken. I was like, whoa, what have I been doing my whole life? Right. There was a massive change. And I remember going home and telling Richard, you know, something happened to me today. Mm-hmm. And I didn't quite know how to explain it because
it is so crazy. Until you experience it, it is so crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was the beginning, right? That was the beginning. And we didn't end up staying in that specific church, but that church changed my life.
Yeah. Well, I think what's beautiful about that is, not too long ago, I read a book by James K.A. Smith called You Are What You Love. And part of what he's talking about with the conversion experience is when God is moving in you, it really doesn't matter what place you're sitting in or who you teaching you're sitting under, whether it's good or bad. I mean, like, that's not the point of it, because no one gets to take responsibility for that except for the work of the Lord. And it's like, aha, it's true. It's not like because that pastor gave the most incredible message, because you hear people all the time say, I don't even remember what the pastor said.
Yes.
I just had this thing in me that it was time.
Yes. It just comes over you, and you don't know what to make of it. And it is amazing. And it is that amazing grace, right?
Yeah, it really is. It really is. And it's just so exciting when you know someone else and you hear their story. You're like, yes, like, I get that, but I don't know how to explain it either.
Yeah.
You know, it's like this connection.
Yes.
Gosh, I could ask a lot of questions about that, because I also think that when we've endured a lot of trauma as children and we do the work of healing from that, that often also moves people into a place of being really interested in the brain and the body, because we're in a, praise God, we're in a place where we're learning more about the connection and how important it is to sort that out. And we'll talk about stress patterns and all the things. But you at some point became a registered nurse.
Yes.
And you're very passionate about helping medical professionals now, because the frantic pace, the fact that you're always needed as a medical professional, is exhausting. And it's really hard to understand that if you've never worked in a hospital setting or in a high stress environment where it's people who need you all the time.
Yes.
And so tell me a little bit about your experience as an RN. And did you have that like stress inducing time where really your trauma, you come face to face with your trauma as a kid when you're in the medical profession? Tell us a little bit about that.
Time. Yeah. So, So I went into nursing at 25. So I was in nursing before I got saved, and that's where I actually met my husband. I'm now one of 13 family members in medicine. Yeah. So I know the firsthand pains. Like,
it's so rewarding, yet so hard.
Yes. Yeah. And it's hard because we as medical professionals are with people in the most difficult days of their lives, right? So it's always that. Nobody's in the hospital because they want to be there. Right. So every day you are facing people who are coming with their own baggage.
Yes.
And their own maladaptive ways of coping. And you're being poked all the time. If you aren't healthy yourself and healed, you're being poked and you're carrying and absorbing that stress onto your own body. And that's what happened for me. So being someone who was exposed to trauma as a child, I chose all the high adrenaline trauma oriented places, right? Critical care, emergency room, you know, all of the adrenaline junkie places to be, because that's what felt normal to me, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you will find often that people in medicine that are, especially those that are in those high adrenaline situations, are there because it feels familiar in their body. And they continue in this pattern until they finally hit a wall. And they start having physical symptoms where they get IBS, they get back pain, neck pain, shoulder pain,
panic attacks, all the
panic
things.
Attacks, all of the physical symptoms of not processing emotions for decades.
Gosh. So you're in this place and you're thinking, because I mean, this is years ago. And you're realizing, like, when did you finally get to the point where you started realizing, I cannot keep existing like this. Like something is not right. Like you meet Christ.
Yeah.
And I mean, probably like a lot of us, you start going, okay, Jesus, you said your yoke's not heavy and that you promise all this peace. And I'll tell you what, that's the last thing I'm experiencing right now. And so we have to at some point wrestle with that, right? Like, what do I do with that?
So for probably a good decade, the church I was introduced to as a new Christian was a blessing and a curse in that sense, right? And I'll just tell a little bit about that. The blessing of it was I had great doctrinal training. It was like going to seminary school. I knew doctrine in and out, right? Like we studied doctrine every weekend. I could tell you all about all of the things. So it was very left brain. And so was my relationship with Christ, right?
Yeah.
It was more duty oriented,
yeah,
more task oriented, more serving, because I have to fill a gap, right?
Yeah.
And there's other parts to that journey, which I won't go into here because that will just get us into another rabbit trail. But the point being, there came a time when I was tired. I was exhausted because I was working myself to the bones, my fingers to the bones all the time. And I was in this high stress state of functioning. And I kept saying to myself, why can't I do what other people are doing? I was looking and saying, I want to abide in Christ, but I keep doing the things that I don't want to do. I keep noticing the same situations coming up again and again in my life, different faces, different places, different people, but the same patterns. Like, so one of the ways that God gifted me is I see patterns
all over the place,
right? I see patterns in other people was where I started, right? I was great at seeing everybody else's
patterns. Oh, for sure.
But not my own, right?
That's right. We forget that we're the Pharisee, right?
Yeah. So when I started seeing my own patterns, like here, I want to do this thing and I want to have this freedom in Christ. Yet there's something in me that keeps tugging me back to the old ways. And, you know, we know that this is the flesh and spirit, which is a constant battle, right? Yeah. But I couldn't understand why I couldn't do the Christian life well.
Well, and I think it's one of, we look side to side too, and it's like so easy to think everybody else is doing it well. And
yes,
that's also
part of our problem. It's almost a lie, right?
It is.
And so it's a lie. And so as I'm looking at all these other people who are doing it well, I noticed that there was something missing, you know, there was the relational aspect missing. And that became my journey, really, just how can I connect to this God who loves me, who gave himself for me? And when I came to Christ, I saw the angry God because I grew up with those glasses on, that perception of verbal yelling almost, right? Mm-hmm. So that's how I saw God. That's how I connected to God, that I was a bad girl and I did bad things. And Jesus died for my sins and he saved me and his blood, you know, was shed for me. And so now I felt like I had to work.
Earn it.
And earn his love.
That's right. And that's the farthest thing from the truth.
And when I got to the point where I was so tired from trying to earn his love, and then I realized, wow, all he wants is me in my heart.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All this other stuff it's not what it's about. It's about a relationship. That changed everything for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Ooh. That kind of shift is something that takes place in the brain and the body, right? Like finally, when I talk to students in youth ministry a lot, it's trying really to get them to understand that yes, behavior is important, but it is not for an earning or to keep a secure placement in God's kingdom. No, it's because it's an invitation into a life that is better.
Yes.
Than the one that you're currently living.
Yes. So. And so here what I discovered from a neuroscience standpoint is that all of that working for God's approval is really fear-based. And
100%.
That exists in one region of the brain. Mm-hmm. And love exists in another region. And fear and love don't run on the same neural circuitry.
Yeah, on
the same track. Isn't that fascinating? Mm-hmm. They don't run in the same track. Mm-hmm. So when I discovered that, I was like, wow, you know, I've been running in the fear track, trying to force love force the fruit of the Spirit into my life to fit there, when in fact, all I have to do is love God and abide in Him, and He's going to produce that fruit through me. That's totally different.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
This episode is brought to you in part by Beyond Ordinary Women Ministries, which prepares Christian women for leadership. At BOW, we believe that every woman is a leader because she influences someone. So, whom do you influence? Do you mentor a woman, serve in the workplace, or do you lead a small group, teach the Bible, or even lead an entire ministry? No matter who or how many you influence, our free online resources will help equip you. Our videos, podcast episodes, and articles from experienced women leaders will encourage you and perfect your leadership skills. They offer wisdom for dealing with ministry pitfalls, current biblical issues, health for your own soul, and insights for shepherding others well. In addition, BOW offers Bible studies designed to connect women of multiple generations. They provide a challenge to both women new to the Bible and those wanting to dig deeper. Be our guest and browse all of our free resources and low-cost Bible studies at beyondordinarywomen.org.
So then when you talk about tracks,
mm-hmm.
because I think it's important for listeners to understand too that fear isn't always, it doesn't always present itself like we typically think about fear. It's not necessarily that I'm afraid of that. There's so many things like that fight or flight response or that freeze response or, you know, like functioning in the place of these high capacity adrenaline situations,
mm-hmm.
sometimes a fear that motivates that. If I slow down, I'm afraid yes. blah, blah, blah is going to happen. So if that is over-exercise, if that's the heavy track that your brain and body go to, mm-hmm. what does it look like to begin reversing that? Because you and I know it is a slow process in the opposite direction.
Yes, it is. Wow. You're not kidding. So just a little background from the neuroscience. Your brain is always either alerting you to the being safe mm-hmm. or protecting, mm-hmm. safe or threat, mm-hmm. right? There's two ways. And I look at threat as the fear-based pathway and safety as the love-based pathway. And so your brain has this filter in it and it does this subconsciously.
Yep.
It's always showing you what you're used to. So if my brain and body are used to going in the fear pathway, the glasses that I'm looking at life from, are those glasses really of everything's dangerous and I have to protect myself?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And from that point of view, we travel down this fear pathway and then we kind of, your brain is a predicting machine. So it kind of predicts what's going to happen next. Oh, that look means she's angry. When that look could mean that the person has gas, right? We have no idea what that look means, but your brain has already made sense of things and connected A and B. It's like a trail, right? And so when we find one breadcrumb or when one domino gets knocked down, we go down this pathway mm-hmm. that we have traveled down before. And the more we use the pathways, the wider they are.
And the
as
deeper
we know,
mm-hmm.
the wider and deeper they are, and the more difficulty we have shifting.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of the work that I had to do personally and that I help people walk through is the work of, first of all, ground zero is noticing,
mm-hmm.
right? Ground zero is noticing what's happening and getting curious about it because mm-hmm. curiosity lies in the same part of the brain that love lies in.
Mm.
So if we can pause for long enough without reacting to shift to a place of curiosity,
mm-hmm.
I wonder why I got so activated when that person said that.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just getting activated and reacting in autopilot, right? I talk about this whole survival mode And I feel like people with trauma are living in a state of survival mode. And I want to just say that 50% of our population has trauma of some kind. So that's half of the world, okay?
Yes.
So we're all walking around with bags on our back that we're carrying, and those bags have rocks in them. So trauma is not just what you always think of, right? Severe, major things. It's sometimes not getting what you needed as a kid, right? So it's not always about the big T trauma. Sometimes it's little T trauma. And when we have any kind of trauma, there's this space in our brain called the window of tolerance. And it's this space that allows us to flow in and out of a balanced nervous system. And for trauma people, that window is really narrow. And so that means we spend a lot of time dysregulated. We spend a lot of time in the fear pathway of the brain. We spend a lot of time in fight, flight, or freeze. And so that is the work that I do, helping people recognize that, whoa, I've left regulation, I've left peace, I've left harmony, I've left my love pathway, and I'm in the fear pathway. And I get to look, as Viktor Frankl says, at that space between the circumstance and the reaction. And in that space lies our freedom. In that space lies our choice. Right. And it's not just top down choice. And when I say top down, lots of our therapy and lots of our churches are focused on top down. A lot of the focus that I work, and when I say top down, I mean your thoughts. Your thoughts create everything. Well, what precedes the thoughts is the energy coming from the bottom up, from your nervous system. And so that energy, those sensations are providing information for your brain to make decisions before you even get to the prefrontal cortex and are able to label it. Okay. In that time, your sensation. So if we can get people to notice what's happening in their bodies and
the
tensing
up of the shoulders and
the
like little heartbeats sometimes that you like kind of that panicky type. There's all kinds, but those are the ones that are familiar to me that I've learned now. Even the tapping of my, for me, it's a tapping of the foot.
Yes.
My foot starts tapping fast. I'm like, something's going on here. But I mean, I just figured this out literally like 3 years ago.
Yes. And that is like a lot of ground zero work, right? Reattaching to your body. So for those who have had trauma, we want to disconnect from those sensations. We want to disconnect from our body because it's been painful in the past, right? So we've stuffed a lot of things. And so part of the ground zero is noticing these sensations and then getting curious about them, right? It's not about letting them rule your life. I know in church, we're always worried about emotions ruling, running the ship, but those emotions have information for us. They're like a light on your dashboard telling us, you know, hey, get curious here. What's happening? Something's off.
Isn't it so much about slowing down? Like that curiosity, what's a part of that is getting quiet and slow long enough to get real uncomfortable with the reality that something is not right.
Yes.
Like this is not normal, because I don't want anyone, and I know you don't either, to hear like our brains, that protection is a very good thing. Like we want our bodies to respond when we put our hand on something hot. We don't want to have to think for 4 seconds before we take our hand off of that, right? That's healthy fear. That's healthy protection.
Yes.
And so what Doreen is talking about is when things happen over and over and over again, where it garners this response that's unhealthy, that tends to be what takes over automatically. And we can notice sometimes in our body, if we slow down enough, that something is happening to garner this response before our thoughts even kick in.
Yes. So good. And the thing is if we don't notice that, we just react the way we've always reacted.
Yeah.
Because it's just a pattern. It's just the dominoes, right? So your kid does something and it makes you feel like a bad parent. And suddenly you say, I'm a bad parent. And so you want to yell at the kids because they're making you look bad. right? It's an automatic reaction. But if we can pause and notice, wow, what's been poked in me here? Mm-hmm. This is an insecurity that's been poked. Mm-hmm. And how true is what I'm thinking? Or was my, did my brain mislabel this in the past? Because your brain is good at doing that too. It's good at mislabeling things based on the glasses that we're looking at life through and misfiling them. So when your brain goes to pick out that file out of the file cabinet, it sometimes is mislabeled.
Yes.
So that's part of the work too, right? Saying, wow, you know, I labeled this as my parents not caring for me, when in fact, my parents did the very best that they could with the tools that they had. So when you change that label, it's like, oh, there's a compassion there.
That's right.
There's a love. There's a care. It changes things, right? So if we get to pause and get curious in those moments when something is activated in us, we can challenge the story that already exists, the file that's in, that we've filed, and really ask ourselves questions to determine, is this file accurate, first of all? Is this something that I should be believing?
Yeah.
Or is there a way I could shift to a new thought? How can I reframe this to not to just put spin on it, right? But what other possibilities could there be beside the one that I'm seeing?
And that's what I try to communicate over and over again is it just takes time.
Yes.
I mean, it really does, but it's so worth it.
Yes.
Like, I mean, because sometimes we don't even see some of the freedom that we're beginning to experience from putting in the work because it's so slow. But retrospectively, you really, really will. And vice versa, when you don't do the work, you may not ever notice, but the people around you 20 years down the line are going, oh my gosh, this is the fallout of years and years of just allowing this trauma to wreak havoc in your life.
Yes.
And I think a lot of us can probably, when you hear those words come out of my mouth, someone may pop in your mind. You know?
Yes.
Well, tell me this, because you also talk a lot about in your book, Transform Your Brain, about the inner critic. And this inner critic, mine has a name. Her name is Irene.
Mine is Charlotte.
Okay.
Just for the
Amy's is Marge.
Out there.
Amy, I was on the phone with my friend Amy this morning and she's like, and I told Marge, and you know, I mean, so it's great to give it a name, friends, because it takes a little bit of the heaviness off of it. And you can put her where she belongs, okay?
Yes.
But this inner critic sometimes is very strong in some people, and it may be trauma-based. It may also be that part of your personality is you have these tendencies, and it's really powerful when you have a lot of trauma in your childhood and you have a bit of an inner critic that's just naturally there. Talk to us about that and, you know, shutting her up.
Yes.
And letting God have the loudest voice in your life.
So that is true. And so she is loud. And what I want you to know is that when we totally resist her, she will get stronger.
Ooh,
because what we resist persists, okay? Mm. How we need to approach Charlotte is by telling Charlotte, you know what, Charlotte, you've done a great job. Thank you for protecting me. And I know you're trying to protect me right now. But I've got this, right? I'm going to go to God for this one. Can you just step aside, right? And by just having that little dialogue, it seems strange, but it's not. So your brain will want to protect you, your brain and body, and Charlotte's going to fight. Oh, no, I got to keep my place because I've kept you safe all these years. So I have got to be here, and I've got to be loud, and I've got to be, otherwise you're going to get in trouble. And so by telling Charlotte, basically, that, you know, you've done a great job, but guess what? We're going to try some new things now. Would you be willing to join me in this? That really just quiets that voice down a lot, right? And so when we hear that voice and we ask Charlotte to step aside, it's really helpful to shift to the love, the relational pathway in the brain. Mm. And that relational pathway is where we connect with God. And so a simple way that I get myself to that side of the brain when I am in the middle of it all, right? Mm-hmm. Like stuff is happening in my body. I might be activated, is by simply rubbing two fingertips together with such attention that you feel all of the sensations and the ridges in your fingers, bringing all of your attention to those ridges. So your brain sensory track is that's the fast track, right? So that quickly gets us to that relational mode. It gets us into the parasympathetic nervous system where we can rest and connect with the people that are in front of us. Mm. So just by doing that little sensory move, I call it, and taking some deep breaths, we are creating that space in between the circumstance and the response, the reaction, to shift to the other area of our brain where we can connect with God. God is love, right? And so he's not in that fear pathway, right? And we know God is everywhere. So I'm just trying to make this simple. But God functions from a place of love, and the fruit of the Spirit flow from that love, and we can attach to God in this area of the brain because our God is a relational God. Mm-hmm. And just like we have faulty attachments with our parents,
yeah,
we have faulty attachments with God sometimes, right?
We do.
And neurotheology tells us that when we attach in a secure way to God, that is when he works most powerfully through us. That is when we can connect with ourselves, others, and God in intimate and meaningful ways that overflow with the fruit of the Spirit. And that's possible to all of us as believers when we become intimate with God in a real secure way. And that's the work right there. Mm-hmm. Knowing that God is not like your father was, or God was not like whatever figure you have in your mind of who God is. Mm-hmm. That's a faulty, misfiled file in the file cabinet of your brain. And God is a God of love, and he wants to connect with us in a secure, attached relationship. It's a chesed love. It's a sticky love. It's a love that is relational and connecting.
Yeah. It's so important when you hear someone like Doreen or you go to a counselor and they're giving you some of these tools to realize that this is how God has made our bodies. Like he's made our bodies with that sensation to where when I can rub my fingers together and pay attention to the sensation, that is not some hokey, made up way. What that is the way God has made you. He has given us tools to help actually calm ourselves down, bring ourselves back into the present, and focus on what is real and right and true and good and beautiful. You know,
I'm not kidding. Yes. And so we have allowed the world to affect our bodies.
Yeah.
And what we're doing really is giving our bodies back to Christ the way he's designed them, right? Mm. He's designed us to be calm and connected and living in our authentic best selves out of the essence of who he's created us to be. That's what he wants for us, right? To walk with him hand in hand on this earth to affect. Mm. And we cannot affect the world unless we connect. We need to connect in order to affect. That is a big premise in my book, right? And I call it withness as a witness. When we can walk in this world with God, connected to him, connected to others, and connected to who he has created us to be in our essence, that is withness as a witness to God's love.
Mm-hmm. It absolutely is. I was just in a retreat this weekend with Dr. Jonathan Pennington, and he does a lot with human flourishing, and he's a Matthew scholar, but his whole weekend was, you know, I, we, they, and yeah. looking at the gospel through this, connecting with God as an individual, mm-hmm. connecting with God as a community, and then connecting with God through people who aren't in our community, which is yeah. the they, and not in a demeaning way, but like, it's a part of flourishing in life yeah. is being able to bring the kingdom of God into all areas. And we can only do that if we work on being emotionally healthy ourselves.
Yes, you are not kidding. Because, you know, let's face it, the minute we're not emotionally healthy and we're talking to someone who thinks differently than we think, mm-hmm. we become activated, mm-hmm. right? Or triggered, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
And so it's at that moment we're at a crossroad, right? We get to either be like Jesus or have our flesh come out in full force, defending our ego, defending, you know,
our
Charlotte
power.
Will come out, mm-hmm. right? Defending your position, mm-hmm. right? And that's what we're seeing in our world today in politics with all the polarization, with all of the
we're seeing it in our churches.
In our churches, yes. Yes. We're seeing a bunch of people that are being flesh-led by fear because it's not their fault, right? It's the world that's infiltrated us on such a grand scale because of our devices. We have computers with us 24/7 now. And so human knowledge used to double once every 100 years. It now doubles once every 12 hours.
It's so crazy, Doreen. That's like a whole nother conversation yes. we could have. Because, but I would push back and say, it's not our fault, but it is our fault. Because yes. there comes a point where we all make choices, right?
Yes. Yes.
And it's like what you said. No, sometimes our bodies just respond. But at the same time, we do have to finally get to a point where we say, okay, something is not right.
Yes.
I know I need to do something different. Now, am I going to do it?
Yes.
You know, and that's a daily choice because
yes, it is a choice. And
that tension doesn't, I'm not going to wake up tomorrow because I made the choice today and all of a sudden everything's going to be hunky dory. It's like, no, I might totally live in the flesh again tomorrow. And right. then you have to make a new choice, you know?
Yes. And I'm not saying it's not your fault in the sense that you don't have choice. I'm saying it's not your fault because we can't change the world.
You're right. Yes, I see what you're right.
Right?
Like,
that's
I mean, it's
really
not going
where
anywhere.
I'm going. We can't change the world, but what we can change is what's happening inside yeah, of us.
Absolutely. Oh, gosh. Yeah. I could talk forever and we're running really long. But what I do want to ask is you do a lot of work with group coaching and with medical professionals and through your books and through lots of things. And so share a little bit about if someone here is listening and they're like, I hear this over and over again. And I just, I don't know what to do. Like somebody like, yeah. I need help.
Yeah.
Where does what you do come into that?
Because this work takes time. Mm-hmm. I have a group coaching program where in that program, it's not about digesting all this information, right? Because we can get information on our phones, on the internet. It's not about the teaching per se. It's about building in new habits and patterns and challenging some of our pre-existing ones. Mm. And so my groups are more experiential learning.
Yeah.
Where we are going to tackle what's happening in your personal life right now, which might be different than my personal life, right? And that's okay. And so you might be having an issue, let's say, with your mother-in-law, and she wants to tell you how to parent those kids, right? And you were raised in a sense where you submit to your elders and you just bite your tongue and you let her walk all over you and into your family, right? So for you, it might be finding your voice and learning how to set boundaries, mm-hmm. right? And so we walk into those shifts, those gentle mm-hmm. shifts, and we practice as a group how to prepare you to actually have the conversations mm-hmm. and then move out and have them. And we come back together and we celebrate as a community. We not only do we celebrate wins, but we, you know, say, hey, what could I have done better here? This was a major fail for me. But in my groups, we're allowed to be both brilliant and imperfect.
Praise God. I don't need to be a part of a group that only allows one without the other. But the reality is that is true. There are groups that you don't feel like you can do both.
Yes. So we can show up real and we can show up with our real stuff that's hard. And this is a safe place. I believe that growth happens in community.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That we do not grow alone. So when you can create a safe environment for people to show up, even as Christians, like some of our churches are not safe. We can't go to a Bible study and say, you know, hey, I'm really struggling with X, Y, and Z, because we would be judged. We would be seen as less than. Mm-hmm. It would affect our position in the community. And that's got to change.
Yeah. Well, so then if they want to get in that group, Doreen? No, you're fine. Yeah. Is it Doreen? Tell us.
DoreenSteenland.com is my website. And you could start just by taking the stress pattern quiz. The stress pattern quiz is just a simple quiz that's going to tell you what your main stress pattern is. And hey, you probably already know what it is, but you'll get a little tool, maybe a tip to tackle that one specific stress pattern that you have. And that will just be another tool to add to your toolbox. Mm-hmm. And if you decide that you like that and you want to, and you'll, if you get on that list, you're going to get for a few days, you'll get some sensory awareness things to create self-awareness. Like what?
So helpful.
What is happening in my body? Mm-hmm. And so we're just going to pay attention to those things. So I'm going to give you exercises that you'll pay attention. And so you'll get a flavor by doing those exercises of what groups with me are kind of like. And you can see if that's something that resonates with you. And if it does, please reach out, because we are a safe place for women of all kinds who want to question the way they're thinking and think about their thinking.
Ah. I love it. Doreen, thank you so much. This is, it's really been enjoyable to just be with you and have this conversation.
Yeah, it was so much fun, Amber. Thank you for having me. This is such an honor. When you reached out to me, I was like, wow, I get to be on Amber's podcast. Amazing. Thank you.
Well, it was fun. We'll have to do it again sometime.
Yes. Thank you.
If you're new here, don't forget to follow the show where you're currently listening, so you never miss a new episode. And whether you're new or seasoned, I would love to hear your thoughts about today's episode or Grace Enough in general. Open Instagram or Facebook and message me at @GraceEnoughPodcast_Amber.
Thank you for listening to the Grace Enough Podcast. Tune in next time.